It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Casey Atkinson, a cattle rancher from Wyoming. Great story. You'll want to hear it in just a moment. First off, Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
Look, my pitch is really simple. The economics are all screwed up. The Democrats set off inflation. That piled on the debt, piled on our demographics, piled on our health care. We're in real trouble as a nation. If we would embrace the disruptions of technology and the incentives for productivity, we can at least bend the curve. We're not going to pay down the debt, but we can bend it so that debt to GDP is survivable. But you got to get the other policies right. And this place is having no conversations that are actually serious, honest, and important. And I don't know how this became Republican versus Democrat. We're now just talking the survival of our republic.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Casey Atkinson. Casey is a trailblazer. Now, first off, let's define what trailblazers are.
So the Trailblazers is a new program that is funded by the Beef Checkoff to represent the Beef Checkoff. And so it's a year-long kind of intensive training program really focused on how to be a better advocate. We're learning everything from how to handle media interviews to polishing up, you know, our presentation skills and just really making sure we have the background and the knowledge and the information to really go out and represent the beef community and the Beef Checkoff in a positive manner and advocate.
Okay. Now, I mentioned, or I don't know if I did, Wyoming, but you have ties back into Texas. Tell me how you go from Wyoming to the panhandle of Texas.
I mean, my parents constantly wonder the same thing. But, you know, as a little girl, who isn't enthralled by the state of Texas? And so I just decided when I was about 4 years old, that was where I was going to live for the rest of my life. And so when it came time to go to college, I ended up going to West Texas A&M. So I'm, you know, I spent 12 years of my life living in Canyon, Texas, there in the Texas Panhandle. So it's home. I didn't exactly intend to leave, but life had other plans, and so it took me away. But Texas is kind of always going to be home for me. I miss it a lot.
So how did you end up back in Wyoming? And that's an interesting story as well.
It is, not to make people sad out there, but so, you know, I worked for West Texas A&M after I finished going to school there for several years. I ended up back in Colorado, actually, as an extension agent when I was looking to transition out of higher education back to agriculture. Extension was kind of the logical stepping stone, I guess, for me to take. But while I was working in extension, about 6.5 years ago, my younger brother, who was the one slated to come home and take over the family operation in Wyoming. I'm fifth generation on my family's ranch in Wyoming. He was headed home and his heart stopped beating. And so, you know, as I say, in one failed heartbeat, everyone's future and everyone's life changed because it was just he and I. And without him, that left me to go home and pick up the reins and step in to be the person who's going to take over the family ranch.
Sometimes you never know when the call is going to come to give you the opportunity and that door to open. Speaking about that door that opened, how has the process been as you've started stepping into that role of taking it all?
Well, it's had some speed bumps along the way. You know, it's interesting. You know, I have this educational background very heavily in agriculture. I was raised on a cow-calf operation. Obviously, spending time in the Texas Panhandle, I got an education in feed yards. I had the opportunity to step into packing facilities. You know, I write for Working Ranch magazine, so, you know, trying to stay engaged. And Tim is constantly sending me places to learn about the industry and what's new and what's upcoming. So I felt like I had all of this information. I'd been on all these places, but you come home to something that has been really established, right? And so Dad and I butted heads a little bit, you know, because I wasn't the child he was prepared to work with. My brother and I had very different personalities, and so it's been a challenge for Dad and I to kind of you know, readjust me having a future I wasn't planning on, him getting the child he wasn't necessarily counting on, and how do we incorporate all of this world experience that I've had off of the ranch with what he has worked so hard to build over the course of almost 79 years, you know, that he's very well established. And so it's been a learning process. How do we blend the new with the old? You know, how can I bring my ideas to the table to kind of move us forward and progress us and maybe improve in some areas while still really having so much respect for all of the knowledge that he brings to the table over just being, doing the slog all these years, you know, and holding on through the 80s when things were tough. And so much respect and love, trying to marry tradition with progress. And I think probably every young person who comes back to the ranch can probably appreciate that.
So it brings up, I think, a great point here. Y'all really didn't have the opportunity to plot this out. So for those who are looking at transition plans and they're at a point where it's not an emergency, if you will, what advice do you give to those families?
We'll do it. You know, I'm always, so even before my own story happened of losing my brother, estate planning has always been a passion of mine and something I think is really important. I'm always shocked by how many agricultural operations don't have an estate plan in place, you know, and not just for the transition of managing inheritance taxes so that the next generation is able to hold it on or hold on to it, but being able to have those conversations, you know, sometimes they're hard. Right? If you're having to tell a child that, you know, there's not going to be a piece here for you because I want to make sure we keep it intact for the child who is here, or, you know, that maybe a child was expecting to inherit it all and all of a sudden you've got to tell them, no, you've got to split this with your siblings. And so, you know, those conversations definitely can be hard, but I can't stress the importance of having them. Because once you're gone, there's no one to have them with. And I think having a plan and trying to be as prepared as you can, it just provides a little bit of peace to everyone. And so if you can start navigating that and putting those plans in place, you know, at least everyone knows what is coming. And I think as you are walking through and navigating grief over the loss of someone, it's just such a gift to give people that they don't have to fight about what comes next because it's already taken care of. So, you know, if you're the person who's in the position to be able to make those decisions and put that plan in place, look at it as a gift to the people you're leaving behind, that all they have to do is grieve you. In the hardest moment of their lives, the only thing you have left them is grief. Not a fight, not having to scramble, not having to make plans, but they can just mourn. And that's having lived through that. That's something that is so important. And you don't realize what a gift that is to leave people until you live it for yourself.
You mentioned fights. And I heard you speak earlier about just difficult conversations that you have. And I believe somebody asked you, how do you handle those, you know, when you're dealing with maybe a consumer? But you said really the toughest ones were from within the industry. How do you handle that?
Well, probably not well at times. You know, I find if I'm talking to the general public who just doesn't understand, and I know that, right? There's nothing that they have in their framework that suggests that they're going to maybe understand. I can have infinite patience with those people, right? And trying to have a conversation and understand where they come from and, you know, see if there's any ground for me to get them to give and a way for me to reach them. But when it's someone within your own industry who is fighting with you or who is coming at you or attacking you, it's hard, right? Because you're like, we are supposed to be on the same team. Why are we not on the same team? And so, you know, for me, I guess I probably tackle it one of two ways. If I'm in the right frame of mind, circling around and trying to find, can we talk about the 80% we agree on and build this foundation that we agree more than we disagree? And maybe we don't have to be ugly about the 20%. And sometimes that works. And then sometimes I'm like, well, all right, why are we in the same industry? You know, if you don't like our industry, really, why are you in it? And I think that's a fair question, and it's probably not a question that wins me friends all the time, but I think if you really hate what we are and how we're structured and what we're doing so much, why do you want to be a part of it? And so that's always, I think, the question that I have for them, and I've not really gotten a good answer back, so maybe someday.
Okay, maybe someday we won't have to just look around to see where we can find Casey at. I mean, you're involved. We can find you through some digital channels. If we want to keep up with you and what's going on, or what's going on with the Trailblazers, where do we look?
Well, if you want to follow me, my social media handle is very appropriately the number 10, 10 miles past nowhere, because that totally describes where our ranch is and where we live. You just go to the middle of nowhere and I'm somewhere past that. So that's where I can be found on all my social media. Instagram is where I'm most active. You can find me on Facebook. But if you're interested in the Trailblazers program, if you go to mastersofbeefadvocacy.com, Trailblazers is an extension of that program. Masters of Beef Advocacy is a phenomenal kind of starting point if you're looking to get into advocacy and, you know, be a spokesperson for this industry, to find some information and some resources. I highly encourage taking a few hours to go through that program. And if you do that and you decide you really want to level up your game, then that's where you could also find information about the Trailblazers program, which is the year-long intensive training program that comes next.
So good to see you. Thanks for your time and for the passion in telling the story. We wish you the best.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on today.
Again, it's Casey Atkinson from Wyoming, a trailblazer from Garrett, Wyoming. I'm Tony St. James. This is the Agribusiness Report.
If you're serious about your crop's yield, you're serious about the quality of your seedbed. Because that's where yield potential begins. The award-winning Sunflower 6380 Series Rotary Finisher can get through the toughest field conditions where other tools can't. The result is a well-mixed, clean, and level seedbed prepared for your success. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Tom Hague is the new president, National Corn Growers Association.
October is the start of a brand new fiscal year for us. And with that comes new leadership. On Saturday, I started my job as president of NCGA. And this year, with a new year already shaping up to be a big one for American corn farmers. There's an ex-farm bill. There's unfinished business in ethanol. And that's just barely scratching the surface. The new year brings new challenges and new opportunities. But I don't know where they all might go, but I do know that we'll be ready to meet them. I'm Tom Hague. I'm excited for the new year, and I'm all in for American corn farmers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
When you grow cotton, you need a heavy-hitting harvest aid. Something that delivers rapid desiccation, that has powerful performance and safe handling. That something is Reviton herbicide. What's more, Reviton comes with a low use rate for greater convenience and efficiency. Hammer home this year's cotton harvest with Reviton. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Reviton. Always read and follow label directions.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. This is the Agribusiness Report.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Making it safer for visitors to the nation's 154 national forests and
improving the visitor experience.
Those are the goals of a new project being funded with $37 million from the infrastructure law. Gordy Bloom directs recreational programs for the U.S. Forest Service. He says with years of having to use maintenance and other monies to pay for firefighting and with record crowds still visiting national forests,
there were obviously impacts to some of our facilities, our infrastructure,
such as hiking trails being washed out or closed, campgrounds closed or with reduced services and such. But Bloom says with this new funding, the Forest Service is compiling a big list of possible projects and trying to determine
what are those most pressing needs in terms of safety, or what are those infrastructure needs that are most impacting the visitor experience.
Bloom says that list of selected projects should be final by the end of the year. Work on some of those could begin then immediately. Gary Crawford, Washington.